Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel. Let's get straight to the docket. First, a big trial is commencing. That's right. The trial regarding the death of Ahmaud Arbery, the jury selection process, has begun. Brian Laundrie's parents are being sued. Wait until you hear for what. And this is a teachable moment as well. Guess what Chad Daybell was doing the same day that Charles Vallow was killed? A man was sentenced for his role in a dating app scheme where they targeted victims. And then finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel, the channel where an actual practicing criminal defense attorney explains the facts, the procedure, and the law, not only to cold cases, but to current criminal cases. Welcome. Now, if you haven't done so already, please hit the subscribe button, hit the thumbs up, hit that bell so you receive notifications when we go live, and as always, please leave me a comment below. And do not forget to listen to this show and past shows by downloading Crime Talk on all of your favorite podcasting apps like Apple, Spotify, iHeart, Amazon Music, and Audible. And very quickly, let's talk about the people that are supporting Crime Talk. First, go to crimetalkprep.com, claim your 3-month emergency food kit. Now, in today's world of food shortages and unknown changing rules, you don't know what is going to be next. Now, if you may recall, a lot of people gave me some heat for even doing anything with Crime Talk Prep at all. And guess what? You go to the stores and the shelves are beginning to be bare. There's actually talk of a shortage of turkeys for Thanksgiving. Who would have thought in America? Well, it's happening right before our very eyes. Go to crimetalkprep.com. Get your emergency food kit and save $100. You'll be happy you did. It's the smart thing to do. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's get to the docket. First on the docket, a very important case is commencing in Georgia. That's right. It's the trial regarding the death of Ahmaud Arbery. So a Georgia town is preparing for the murder trial of 3 white men charged with killing Ahmaud Arbery, a 25-year-old black jogger whose shooting was captured on video last year. Greg McMichael, 65, his son, Travis, 35, and the neighbor, William Roddy Bryan, 52, are accused of killing Arbery after spotting him running in their neighborhood on February 23rd of 2020. Now, Bryan filmed part of the shooting in a video that sparked national outrage over a lack of arrests for more than 2 months. Now, Arbery was shot 3 times at close range with the shotgun, and defense lawyers for the McMichaels say they were trying to make a citizen's arrest because they believed Arbery was a burglary suspect, saying Travis McMichael shot Arbery in self-defense. Arbery was shot in the Satia Shores neighborhood in Brunswick, a small Georgia town about 70 miles south of Savannah. Now, no arrests were made in this case for more than 2 months until a video of the incident shot by defendant Bryan was released by his then attorney. It was sent to a radio station and they put it up on their website. Now, Mr. Arbery, I hope that for the attorney's sake, I guess that you gave consent to release that video. And I'm sure you did because you thought it was going to help you, but it turned out, that's right, to basically be the best evidence against you. Now, in the short clip, a white pickup truck blocks the view of the beginning of the struggle. A gunshot is heard, then Arbery and Travis McMichael are seen with their hands on a weapon that is angled upward toward Arbery. The struggle again goes out of view, and Gregory McMichael is seen in the back of the truck. A second shot is heard, and the camera shifts back to the fight where Arbery is throwing punches. A third gunshot is heard, and Arbery falls to the ground. Brunswick, Georgia, which has just over 16,000 residents, is predominantly black, but sits in an overwhelmingly white Glynn County. Now, The charges against the three men, the McMichaels and Brian, they've been charged with malice murder and felony murder, two counts of aggravated assault, and one count of false imprisonment and criminal attempt to commit false imprisonment. The trio are not facing state hate crime charges because Georgia didn't have hate crime laws at the time, but they have been federally charged with violating Arbery's civil rights. The three men are also facing a wrongful death civil lawsuit from Arbery's mother, Wanda Cooper Jones. The murder charges could result in a life sentence. The aggravated assault has a maximum sentence of 20 years in prison. False imprisonment is punishable by up to 10 years in prison. Now, if the defendants are convicted of multiple counts, they'll be sentenced to the most serious charge, as the charges will in fact merge. This is going to be an interesting case to watch. There are going to be lots of legal issues, specifically as it comes to the jury instructions that are going to be given. It will be unlikely that the defense can actually get the self-defense instruction unless, well, somebody testifies and says it was self-defense. That would be, obviously, the younger McMichael. Additionally, there's going to be issues as it relates to whether the defendants are going to be able to get this good citizen, good faith law, which allows them to make citizens' arrests. I've read the statute. I don't believe that's going to be the case because I don't believe the evidence is going to show that these men knew or actually were aware that a burglary was taking place. Speculation is not enough. It's going to be an interesting trial. Hopefully, both sides get a fair trial, and hopefully, well, the jury will do the correct thing, and that's based upon the evidence that's legally presented to them to consider when following the law. Obviously, if there's a conviction, there will be an appeal. Next on the docket, Brian Laundrie's father is being sued. That's right. Chris Laundrie is being sued by Andra Griffin and is suing Brian Laundrie's father, Chris Laundrie, for $40. And the complaint alleges that on or about October 15th, 2021, plaintiff contributed funds to help construct a sign with the words, "What if it was Cassie?" in reference to Cassie Laundrie, the daughter of the defendant, as part of a peaceful protest. Now, the sign, which is the subject matter of the lawsuit, was erected near the home of Christopher Laundrie. And this is their home in the city of Northport there in Florida. The complaint further alleges that on or about the morning of October 26th, the defendant, Christopher Laundrie, came out of his home, walked up to the sign, stole it, and walked back into the property. Now, Chris Laundrie has to appear via Zoom on Wednesday, December 1st, basically to file an answer to this crime. Well, actually, I have to take that back. To this civil case, Mr. Laundrie has not been charged with any crime. But the civil elements are going to be the same. First, the allegations are that he stole property. It's a charge of conversion in the civil world. And basically what that means is that somebody took something of value from another person without legal permission to do so, just like in a criminal case. And they have to be able to show that Chris Laundrie didn't have a right to do so, that the sign was not on his property. We'll see how this resolves. It's a whole $40, but hey, you just never know. There's been a lot of talk of the Brian Laundrie case, and obviously he hasn't been found. But a lot of people said, "Hey, Scott, could you put together a quick summary?" Well, here we go. And yes, there are other summaries that we've done, but here are some of the quick summaries of the witnesses that have been involved in this particular case. First, we've got Sonny Mason. And Sonny alleges on August 25th or 26th, Petito and Laundrie stopped by the Victor Emporium, which is about 30 miles from the Grand Teton National Park, according to the employee Sonny Mason. Mason was said that Laundrie was acting strange and odd, pointing out that he and Petito were engaged. Mason said Petito didn't seem excited to be engaged. Complete speculation. Now, Nina Celi Angelo believes she saw Laundrie arguing with a restaurant employee while eating at the Mary Piglets restaurant in Jackson, Wyoming. And she speculates that his body language seemed aggressive, and Petito later apologized for his behavior. Miranda Baker and her boyfriend picked up a hitchhiker they believe was Brian Laundrie on August 29th around 5:30 p.m. Laundry said that he had been camping alone and that Petito was working on social media content in the camper that they were using. When Laundry heard they were going to Jackson Hole, he abruptly asked to get out of the car and was literally gone within 15 seconds after he'd gotten out of the car. Then we have Norma Jean Jalovec. Now, later that same day, Jalovec believes she gave Laundry a ride around 6:30 or 6:40 p.m. Jalovec has said that she was near the Jackson Lake Dam for a church service when she saw a man looking for a lift. The man, whom Jalovec suspects was Laundry, asked her to go to the Spread Creek campgrounds, which is where Petito's body was later found. As she drove toward the entrance of the campground, Laundry is said to have gotten startled and attempted to get out of the moving car. Then we have William and Charlene Guthrie. Now, after Laundry returned to his parents' home in Northport, Florida, on September 1st with Petito's van, William and Charlene Guthrie, who live across the street, have said that they saw the Laundry's family pack a camper and leave for a camping trip and return a week later. At the time, they assumed that the van was Brian's and said they didn't know much about them at all. A second neighbor, another person who lives near the Laundry family residence, has said that she saw a man who looked like Brian Laundry running from his home on September 17th, the day his parents reported him missing. The other neighbor, known only as Jen, has said that the man ran into the nearby woods and thought that maybe another neighbor may have captured the incident on their security camera. Now, the parents of Gabby Petito have said in a new interview that they trusted her fiancé, Brian Laundry, to protect her on the couple's road trip across America. Petito's mom, Nicole Schmidt, admitted that prior to the couple's nomadic adventure, she had concerns about her 22-year-old daughter's safety, but at the time said that I felt safe because she was with Brian and I felt like she would be okay. She stated that she thought he would take care of her. Now, Schmidt had supported Petito's decision to travel with Laundry, whom she described as being polite and quiet. Now, Joe Petito's, Gabby's father, previously said he, too, saw no red flags with Laundry. Now, Schmidt said she suspects Laundry's parents may know what happened to her daughter, saying during this interview, "Silence speaks volume." And I get that, and I understand that, but it can also be a good decision, particularly if you do, in fact, know something. I'm just saying, there's a difference between morality and legality, and usually they're not the same. It's quite surprising when you think about it. We can talk about that tomorrow when we go live. And now Schmidt wants Laundry to face justice. Jim Schmidt, Petito's stepfather, chastised Laundry for hiding from authorities, and hiding he is. We are now over a month and nowhere to be found. But we do know that federal agents are looking for everybody, including people that look like Brian Laundry. That's right. Over the weekend, a Brian Laundry lookalike was bum-rushed by feds while staying in a hotel near the Appalachian Trail. The gentleman's name was Severin Beckwith, and he was hiking the Appalachian Trail with a pal and staying at a hotel called the Fontana Village Resort and Marina in North Carolina. Well, the U.S. Marshals gave him a pretty rude awakening the other day because, according to Beckwith, he says that he heard a knock on the hotel room door, and before he knew it, the federal agents with riot gear and shields were busting in, guns raised, pointed at his face, where they proceeded to pin him down and check him for signs that he was, in fact, Brian Laundry. Apparently, one of the agents who was checking him out said he had a notch in the upper part of his ear, just like Laundry. Well, Beckwith was eventually cleared. After providing an ID and showing he didn't have Brian's tattoos, Beckwith was cut loose. Now, while also being warned he should shave his beard for this foreseeable future. Now, the hotel felt a little more contrite than the agents did. Instead of giving him grooming advice, they actually comped his room and gave him a free breakfast for his troubles. Gee, thanks. Now, this raises a serious question. It's a teachable moment, ladies and gentlemen. We have talked about this before. One of the things that the prosecution always has the burden of proving is that it was, in fact, the defendant, not someone that look like the defendant, not someone maybe even using the defendant's identity, but it was in fact the defendant that committed the crime. And when the agents are going around arresting, and you can say anything you want, but it was an arrest because that young man was not free to go. When they arrest the wrong people, it goes to the overall credibility of the investigation. If and when there's ever a trial before Brian Laundrie, don't you think the defense is going to bring up how they got it wrong? Yeah, they are. Just saying. You got to get it right. Come on, agents. Come on, marshals. You know better. Next on the docket, guess what Chad DeBell did the day that Charles Vallow was killed? Well, he was just a busy little bee calling an Arizona funeral home the day Charles Vallow was shot and killed by Lori Vallow's brother. Now, according to newly released documents, he spelled his name as Chad DeBall, D-A-B-A-L, and asked how much a cremation would cost. Now, a transcript of the phone call to the Valley of the Sun Mortuary and Cemetery was included in a bunch of documents that were released pursuant to a public information request. The call was made just before 8 p.m. on July 11th of 2019, and Vallow would have been shot and killed about 12 hours earlier. Now, DeBell claimed to be from Iowa and said that his uncle, John DeBall, had died at the hospital, and he said he wanted the body taken to the medical examiner and explained that he wanted the body cremated in Chandler before the shipping of the cremation remains back to New Orleans. Now, the funeral home gave DeBell a quote for about $2,000, which included shipping and handling. And DeBell apparently giggled and said, well, we'll deal with the services later. And he's just been trying to get a ballpark estimate for the cremation today. Chad ended the conversation saying he would call other funeral homes, and then he abruptly hung up. And Valley of the Sun Mortuary and Cemetery ended up handling arrangement for Vallow's remains. And this is all according to his obituary. Now, his body was cremated, and funeral staff told detectives they only dealt with Lori Vallow in regards to those arrangements. You have to admit, Chad DeBell, for a guy who hardly knows Lori Vallow, according to some people, and it's simply a very platonic relationship, he sure is being such a helpful little busy bee, don't you think? All right, ladies and gentlemen, if you've never got crimetalksearch.com, you know, that background subscription service, this story may make you want to do that. If you don't, well, you're committing dating malpractice if you're dating people that you meet on the internet. All right, well, or anywhere, to be a matter of fact. So a Texas man was sentenced to 23 years in federal prison for his connection in a scheme that used the popular dating app Grindr to target gay men for violent hate crimes. Daniel Jenkins of Dallas pled guilty in June to one count of conspiracy to commit hate crimes, kidnapping, carjacking, one hate crime count, and one count of using a firearm during and in relation to a crime of violence. The scheme began in December of 2017 when Jenkins and co-conspirators created profiles on Grindr to lure men to locations where they would rob them. In one incident earlier that month, after the men arrived, the members of the conspiracy held the men at gunpoint and forced them to drive to ATMs to withdraw cash from their accounts. In another incident, Jenkins admitted that the others lured multiple victims to an apartment complex, pointed a gun at them, robbed them and their belongings, and assaulted them, leaving them injured physically as well. Jenkins told investigators that members of his group used gay slurs and taunted the victims, and that one member attempted to sexually assault one of the victims. Jenkins' co-conspirators were Michael Atkinson, Pablo Cenceros de Leon, and Daryl Henry, all of whom are in their 20s. The three men pled guilty in June, and they have been sentenced from 11 to 22 years. Now, Grindr, this is, I think, the interesting part. It says, Grindr says they're always saddened to hear about the difficult and sometimes tragic experiences that our community members have experienced both online and off. The company added that it encourages users to, that's right, be careful when interacting with people they don't know. In its safety guidelines, the company suggests that if someone wants to meet another user from the app, do so in public at a safe space, like an LGBTQ-friendly cafe, and be careful about the possessions that you take with you. Yes, that is some good common sense, ladies and gentlemen, but it applies whether using Grindr, Tinder, Babelfish, whatever. Don't go anywhere to meet somebody without doing a background check. Please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about what was in their background, now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, now is the time to do it. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you put in the name, literally millions of public records are searched and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever. But if it's there, it's going to be found. You're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship. You're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did. And finally today, before we get to our dumb criminal contestant of the day, let's talk about the winner from last week. That's right. In a very overwhelming vote count, Santiago Victoria was our winner. As you may recall, a homeowner had installed a camera inside of her barn after finding that horses had strange marks and ropes tied around their necks. The camera captured Santiago Victoria, 57, entering the barn late at night and invading a stall with a horse named Mariah. That's right. He got behind the horse in a sexual manner. And ultimately, that's right, Mr. Victoria admitted to sexual relations with the horse. All right. There's so many things that put Mr. Victoria over the top. But all I can say is he is our dumb criminal contestant winner of the day. We'll send him a Crime Talk mug. That's your prize. Do with it what you want, Mr. Victoria. Just don't do with it the same things that you were doing with the horse, because that's just weird, creepy, and gross. Today, our dumb criminal contestant is another school teacher. Yes, a teacher by the name of Victoria Farish Weiss. Now, she's 27, and she's charged with possession of marijuana. And this was discovered after police received word that the Taki Creek Elementary School student had picked a pack of marijuana edibles out of a box full of candy that Weiss used to reward students. Now, the packages of marijuana candy often are packaged in wrappers with logos very similar to traditional candy brands. Now, marijuana candy is sold online and is legal in some states, but it is still illegal in South Carolina. Now, Miss Weiss is our dumb criminal contestant of the day. We'll give her the presumption of innocence. Who's to say she's the one that actually put the candy of edibles into the candy box? Maybe somebody else did it. Maybe she had no idea whatsoever. Or maybe she just made a foolish mistake and put her edibles in the box. But either way, she's a school teacher. She's ultimately responsible for what her children do while they're in school, or don't do, I guess, fail to do. So the bottom line is, Miss Weiss, you are a dumb criminal contestant of the day. Somehow I don't think you had ill intent, nor that you, would you intend to do that. Because my experience is most people that pay for their edibles certainly don't want to share them, and they certainly don't want to share them with young children. All right, that's all we have for you today. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.